Welcome to Education Perspectives. I am your host, Liza Holland. This is a podcast that explores the role of education in our society from a variety of lenses. Education needs to evolve to meet the needs of today and the future. Solving such huge issues requires understanding. Join me as we begin to explore the many perspectives of education. Karen Mofield Boswell works within Fayette County Public Schools as a district family and community engagement liaison. Over the years, she has served in multiple capacities within FCPS, both as a volunteer and as a team member. She was an active board member on the 16th District PTA, an SBDM member, and vice chair of the Equity Council Committee. Sharon brings to FCPS a passion for students, families, and community, with an unwavering commitment to equitable educational excellence for every student. She currently serves as an executive board member of CAGE, Kentucky Association for Gifted Education, executive director of LexCAGE, and as a member of the Pritchard Committee's Equity Coalition. Her experience as an educator and an advocate speaks to her passion to build capacity around engaging FCPS families as partners in the family and community engagement work that lies ahead. All right. Well, Sharon, welcome to Education Perspectives.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, and I'm going to hit you up with the first question that I ask every guest. If you take it from a 30,000 foot view, why do you think that we as a society invest in education?
Well, I think it's interesting, really, that all societies value education. You won't find a people or a society on the planet that does not value education. And I think the reason is the same, because we want better for every generation. And we know that education is a pathway to better. We all want to do better, know better, have better opportunities. And I think that's why every community invests in education.
Great answer. So you in particular have been involved in education from multiple perspectives. What first drew you to education as a field?
Well, this is going to sound familiar to you, Miss Liza, but PTA was where I got started. So I think when you have children and you start into the public school system or any school system and you start to form your own cohesive relationships with other parents and other families who have shared experiences and various experiences, and you start to build relationships and sometimes commiserate and sometimes advocate and a little bit of all of that, then you start to form those relationships in PTA. And that's really how I got started, was just working with PTA, with my kids' schools. And then once you get involved in that, as you well know, you start to see things that maybe you wish you could change, or does anyone know that this needs to change? And then you scale it up a little bit and it's more towards advocacy. And then you just really work your way into a job, kind of. It's kind of what happened to me. I decided I wanted to work in education. That wasn't how I had planned my life, but that's where I ended up being. And it turned out to be my heart passion is education. So ended up working there, and now I have literally a job that I feel like was created for me.
Oh, that is so great. I know you started out a little bit differently. Can you tell me about some of the different jobs you've held within education and what you're doing now?
Yes. So I was a preschool teacher for about 7 years in a private Christian preschool. Kind of started doing that as a part-time job, really just to supplement income. And I liked being with kids. I liked literacy. I liked helping kids learn to read. So I started there. And then I decided I had a mentor that asked me if I would interview and think about coming to work for Fayette County Public Schools, a kindergarten paraeducator, which was very similar to what I was doing in transitional, you know, pre-K where I was before. So I applied for that job and started working as a kindergarten paraeducator. And I did that for a couple of years. And then he asked me if I wanted to be a writing coach, because I was a good writer and I was passionate about writing, and if I wanted to co-teach fifth grade writing. So then I moved to fifth grade writing. I taught that for a year and I loved that. I really loved all of it. There's really none of it that I've not loved. Then a position came open for a 21st century coordinator, which was in our school. It's a federal grant that funds out of school time. So after school programming focused on literacy and remediation of math, and then also some acceleration for students who need acceleration. So I applied for that job, got that one, did that one for 2 years. And then they started with ESSER and COVID and all those things kind of happened. And I went back to co-teaching fifth grade during the day virtually, and still doing after school virtually all that during COVID. And then family and community engagement, they started putting those positions in the schools to kind of help liaise between FRCs, after school programs, the school, and the community. And that was a natural fit for me. So I started doing that in addition to my other things. And then, you know, Fayette County also has a district family and community engagement office. So I kind of always kept an eye on that spot, hoping for an opening. And when one came open, I applied and got that. And now I support 12 non-Title I elementary schools in Fayette County with family and community engagement.
Fantastic. You know, one of the reasons I started this podcast is that I know that folks on the outside don't really realize the breadth and depth of all the different types of work that is being done within the school systems. And you've just listed off several that I'll bet most people, you know, maybe the paraeducator, which is an assistant sort of a thing. So tell me, as far as the teaching things and whatnot, did you have to have a teaching degree in order to be able to hold those jobs?
I did not. So I had to have a bachelor's degree. It's a really good thing about Kentucky now is that there's optional other options to get there. And anytime that I was teaching, I was co-teaching with another teacher. So my degree is in math, natural, and physical science. So there's optional pathways where you can get certified without actually having a teaching degree.
You know, I think that's so important because there are people out there who are education advocates, but they feel like, no, I'm just going to have to go back to school for years to be able to get a degree. And that's not necessarily the case. And especially if you want to substitute teach, I know there are huge openings for that to get your feet wet as a paraeducator or as it through a certification with EPSB. You can also be a substitute teacher if you had good grades in college, have that bachelor's degree. So I like to throw that out there for listeners, because just in case you're thinking about doing something extra, support the schools.
That's right. And Fayette County has the Grow Your Own program.
Tell us about that.
I'm not really an expert at it, but I'll tell you what I know about it. They have some partnerships and they have these cohorts that they create. So if you're in a position and want to work your way to teaching, or if you're teaching and you want to work your way, say, to a curriculum specialist or an instructional support specialist. And another one is administration. Sorry. They also have one for aspiring principals who, like assistant principals or people who want to get into the administration. So they have three different cohorts and they have partnerships with different universities in Kentucky, where you get reduced tuition if you need to go back. And then they kind of mentor and guide you along the way so that you're working while at the same time working towards your next step.
Oh, that's so smart. Good deal. Good to know. Thank you for sharing that. So coming back to this job that was kind of made for you, tell us about what you love about what you do in the FACE office.
Yes, I love everything about my job. I say that every day. I love especially that I'm able to connect what I think are the two biggest pieces, which is out of school time and family engagement. Those are the two things that I'm very passionate about, because I know that those 17 hours a day support what happens the other 7 hours a day. And if they're not connected and bridged, then they're siloed and it's not going to work effectively for student or family success. So the most thing I love most about my job is just seeing those things connect and bringing families to school and school to families and seeing them all work together towards better for themselves and for their students, and just kind of be that connector with people to make that happen.
You know, you and I have that so much in common. We love being connectors and have done that for a lot of our lives. And school is very siloed. It, you know, as you go along, when I was with the 16th District PTA, it always shocked me how, you know, a person in the kindergarten classroom had absolutely zero idea what happened at middle school and had absolutely no idea what was going on in transitions for high school, et cetera. And so you kind of get wrapped into your own little womb. But I feel like the family and community engagement really does a good job of helping to kind of give that larger view and help to connect parents with resources. Would you like to expand on that?
Yeah, we really try to work with our families to create programs and also resources that are meaningful and helpful to them in real time. The other piece that I've noticed a lot, just being out connecting in the community, is our community is very invested in our students and they want to help. And sometimes It's really the connection. I don't know how to say it any better than that. It's just, there's a lot of people who want to do great things with our families and our students, but they don't know where to go or where to start. So a big role, I feel like, of my office and what I do is kind of making that connection of this is where we need you. This is where we can start. So that's very, very important.
That's an exciting thing. And I love to see our district here investing in that, because school does indeed need to change. The old model of set and get isn't really getting us anywhere. And the community is going to be a big part of creating that change.
Right. We want to build our own community too, because the kids in the school now are our community of the future.
Takes a village.
We all should be heavily invested in what that's going to look like.
Exactly. Can you tell us a story or a favorite memory about your work in education, maybe just across all of the different things you've done?
I have so many. I'll tell you something that happened last night. The lab was doing a free haircut and back to school event, which the lab is the Lexington Academy of Barbering.
Ah.
So they hosted our Cuts and Curls event last year, which we changed a little bit this year, moved to a voucher system to increase our community partnerships, really, and just to make it easier on families with scheduling and, you know, all those specifics. But anyway, as soon as I walked up to the event last night, one of my kids, which they're all my kids, if I've ever had them, they're all my kids. I just heard suddenly, "Miss Boswell, is that you?" And I was like, oh my gosh. And he had grown so much. He was getting ready to start middle school and I couldn't believe it. So I just love those little moments where they remember you and they're so glad that you remember them. And his mom was there. His grandmother was there. His cousin was there. And it was like, oh, we're so glad to see you. So those connections are not just one and done. They're long lasting. And they know they can reach out to me if they ever need anything or if there's any way I can help. And I'm always glad to see them. So there's little moments like that every time I'm in the community, and they always make me happy.
That is so exciting. And you can really make a difference in a child's life in so many different types of ways, just by making them feel heard and seen. That's very special. So we've talked a lot about the positives. What about the biggest challenges and obstacles that you face?
In my specific role as family community engagement, I think the biggest challenge I feel like is that maybe it's not valued for what the impact could be if it were placed the same priority as, and I know that instruction is important and what teachers do is important. It's all important, but family and community engagement, I feel like, is the missing piece. And I know you remember that from 100 years ago, it wasn't that long, but you know, the missing piece training that we did years ago, it is the missing piece. So I just sometimes feel like it's a piece of the puzzle that is so important and it's vital to the whole picture, but it's kind of lost. So that's my biggest challenge, I feel like, is just constantly kind of sounding that drum of this is important. This is the game changer. This is going to make the difference. This is what we have to do. That's probably the biggest challenge. And I think it's changing. I think the landscape with that's changing some.
Okay.
Dr. Karen Mapp and the Harvard Family Engagement that she does and the dual capacity framework. There's a lot of things I feel like are changing around that narrative, but it's not changing fast enough for me, I guess.
Well, never fast enough for me either. So we're partners in crime there. So can you tell me a little bit about, I know you have done a lot of work on the gifted education side of things in your advocacy work.
Yes.
A lot of parents aren't really even familiar with the fact that we've got that available. Can you tell us a little bit about what parents should look for if they feel like they have a child who might need some gifted education?
Yes. So the first thing you want to pay attention to is assessments, because that's how they're going to identify your student. And be particularly interested in primary talent pool in Kentucky is families can nominate their child. No one knows their child better than the family. So you're going to see things at home and you may not even know that it's giftedness. It's just something a little different about your child or something special or something. It's just a notch above what you feel like is typical. You'll notice that when they're with their peers or their siblings. So paying attention to what's happening at home, paying attention to those assessments, being aware of primary talent pool, being aware of what your rights are as a parent to nominate your child for a primary talent pool. And that's probably the most important things, I think.
It is really important because I think a lot of parents are just getting into things about the time primary talent pool happens and they don't even know that that's on the horizon or existing for their students.
And by the time they figure it out, they're getting ready to go into the gifted identification.
Yeah.
So because primary talent pool is, you know, K through three. So when they start identifying then fourth and up, that's when you really have to be aware. And I also tell parents all the time and families that your expectation for your student should be a year's annual academic growth, whatever that looks like, wherever they are, wherever they end should be a year down the road, every year. And if that's not happening, that's when your advocacy needs to step in.
Absolutely.
On gifted side or on the other end of the spectrum, either way, a full year's growth is a reasonable and acceptable expectation.
Well, and that kind of brings us back to your work on the Pritchard Committee's Equity Coalition. A lot of times parents that have more challenges in their lives don't have the opportunity to really focus on school the way they might, but it is important to be able to advocate for your child. If your child is bright, but maybe comes from an atypical background, that doesn't mean you can't advocate and try to get your child into that primary talent pool.
Right.
Tell us a little bit more about the equity work you're involved in.
We're really trying to work on, as far as Fayette County goes, trying to work on pushing out special program information so that we're being equitable about putting that information out there, access to the programs, helping families with the applications and the processes. So we're really working hard on that piece. The Equity Coalition is very broad. So it looks at a lot of different things. I know next month we're looking at advanced placement courses across different populations and demographics and even locations, rural versus urban. So that's part of what we're doing next month, I think. And this last month we were looking at the Community Schools Initiative grant. So any way that we can just get families and students more involved in all the opportunities that are out there, make sure they're aware, to make sure they have access. Everything that's available is not accessible. And we're either being intentionally inclusive or we're being unintentionally exclusive. So we just really try to focus our efforts on those two things, availability and inclusivity.
You know, and that's a fabulous way to go about things, but it is sometimes even, it's really hard for the smaller group that you have on your team to be able to get out to absolutely everybody. So if a parent wants to get more involved and they don't feel they're getting that from their school or something like that, where should they reach out?
So we have family and community engagement liaisons assigned to every school in Fayette County Public Schools. So my particular role right now, I support non-Title I elementary schools. But on our website, if you go to family and community engagement, I think it's just under the families tab, you will see all of our names and all of our contact information. And all 70 schools and special programs have someone assigned to help be that connector for schools and families. And we have a great team. It's a very diverse team, very talented team, all very unique and different with their strengths, but all very, very compassionate and very, well, passionate, I guess, too, about the work.
Exactly. What a great combination. And you do. You have a phenomenal team, and I must give you guys a lot of credit for the hard work that you are doing. I know that it's a never-ending battle, as it were, as you have new families coming in all the time and making sure you think, oh my gosh, I've sent things out to everybody. And then there's always somebody that goes, I didn't know about that. So.
And we have 95 languages in Fayette County, too.
Isn't that amazing?
Another big focus of our department is just language justice. And that is, are we providing interpretation services? Are we providing translated documents, translated materials? Are we making sure we have, are utilizing our multilingual ambassadors? Are you aware that we have those?
I'm not aware that you had them. So, hey, I'm learning something new here too. That's awesome.
They're like a little secret right now, but they're awesome. So we hired 10 multilingual family ambassadors that represent a wide berth of languages. And they are kind of like a liaison. They do some translation and interpretation, but they also will go with families to conferences. They will come to family nights. They attend ARCs, anything to kind of break down the barrier that language can sometimes present to our families. And they are under interpretation and translation services with Jessica Sanchez. So they're also listed on our website. It lists what languages they speak.
Okay.
You can also link there with Jessica and request their services. So they are excellent and they work very closely with us on kind of bridging the language justice that we're really trying to work on in our district as we continue to grow beautifully diverse and bigger.
That is so wonderful, because I do remember being so grateful to some of my fellow PTA parents who were bilingual, particularly in Spanish, and being so relieved that I could tap into their talents and their knowledge of the families and communities and whatnot to try to continue to build those bridges. So kudos to you. Yet another wonderful development there at Fayette County.
Yes, we are very, very excited about that.
Good deal. Well, so lots of great progress, lots of good forward thinking and all that kind of thing. But, you know, we're not there yet. So what would you like for decision makers to know?
So many things. We could have an entirely new podcast on those things. Oh, let's see. Legislators, I would like for them to know that we need universal pre-K, that we need to fully fund kindergarten, and that we need to expand our CTE offerings, and we need affordable higher education, and we need student loan relief. So I would start there with them. And at the district level, I would probably continue to say what I always say, and that is that transportation is a real barrier. And I'm not sure what the fix is for that. But anything that's after school programming or outside the school day, and also for our families, you know, evening events, after school events, transportation and language are two huge barriers. And they're not, it's not that we don't know. We know, we've known for decades that these are barriers. So I continue to say, if we know better, we must do better. So I think I will just have to probably die on that hill, but I'm going to keep pushing.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
The transportation is something we have got to find a way to make transportation accessible to all families and students outside school hours.
You know, and it's so hard, especially for families who are in a situation where parents have to work 2 and 3 jobs just to be able to put food on the table. Their time is incredibly valuable. And so anything that we can do to make it easier for them and to be able to, you know, to provide that transportation or childcare at an event or anything like that, just to be able to alleviate some of that is so important. And I know it's not the glamorous thing when it comes budget time, but boy, we really, really need to continue to invest there and also in our Friskies and that sort of a thing, because we need to make things equitable. We need to make sure that every child has a fresh start and on an every year basis.
Yes.
And doesn't have to climb over 1,000 obstacles to get there.
Well, I always say, if you feed them and you showcase their kids, that's a really, because you're always hearing like, you know, we can't get parents to come. Well, first of all, yes, you can. But we have to do things differently. So we have to provide, remove barriers, transportation, maybe provide a meal, showcase their kids, let the kids be the lead. And we also have to learn to honor invisible engagement. I mean, sometimes we just, and I say we as in all of us, we just don't. Just because I'm not there, because maybe I am working my second shift job, does not mean I don't value education or I don't care how my kid does. You know, we have to learn to honor that. Just because someone's not visible in the building every day or once a week or even once a month doesn't mean they're not engaged. Their child's in school. They have what they need. They're fed. They're clothed. You know, their stuff's coming back and forth to school. That's engagement.
It most certainly is. And there is, you know, politics has taken an ugly turn when it comes to education, and that narrative out there that parents just don't care is, I just really believe it's a faulty one. Is there a 5%, maybe even 10% in some areas, group of parents who have such problems in their own lives that they can't focus in this area? Yeah, sure there are. But the vast majority of parents that I met in no matter what circumstance cared very deeply about their kids, cared very deeply about them succeeding. And most of them did not necessarily know how to make that happen. And so that's why I'm so glad for PTA and for the FACE office and for all the efforts that the district is doing to really be able to reach out to these families to make a difference, because we do have willing partners out there. They just need to understand what it is that they need to do.
Right. And we need to listen to what they need us to do too. So sometimes, you know, we tend to be transactional with schools. This is what I need 20 moms to bring 15 dozen cupcakes, you know, whatever. And that's, it's transactional. This is what we need families to do. Families need to do this. And then when you do, we're going to be so happy because we have such involved parents. Well, there's a difference in involvement and engagement. So in engagement, you're co-creators. You know, you're actually developing systems and structures that both pieces are working together. And that's not often how it goes, which is unfortunate, but we're working on changing that, changing the capacity of that.
I think that is such a key element. Can you give us an example of where that has worked that you've seen?
I think it works in a lot of our schools and we don't even realize. But when you look at your FRISC advisory councils, I don't know if you're familiar with those or not, but they have parent representatives. A lot of the Title I schools have Title I advisory councils that have family representatives. SBDM councils have family representatives. So that's where you're moving families from the transactional piece to a relational piece. And that is, we have a relationship with you. We value what you say. We want you to come be a part of our decision making, not only making the decisions, but implementing them and supporting them. Part with that is sometimes the inequity in who that is and who's available to meet those certain schedules. But overall, I think those are good models for how we can engage families in co-creating.
Absolutely. And being open to your parents' crazy ideas for how change might happen, I think is also a welcome thing. So often we hear teachers talking about parents complaining and parents being frustrated. And I found that at the district level, by the time it got to the district level, parents were angry because they hadn't had their problem solved. And so this perception of difficult parents is out there. And if we can fight to make that a collaborative relationship to where we are actually, as you say, co-creating solutions, because every child is a little bit different, but that possibility is there. And I want parents to feel empowered to go in and to advocate on behalf of their child.
Yes.
And try to encourage the administrators and the teachers not to feel attacked, but to look at it as a joint problem-solving operation.
Right. And it was a really important piece that you said, too, is by, you know, by the time we get to the district level, some of the issues and concerns, there's exasperation by that point. So I'm always just like, I don't know why anybody's shocked, but I could be that parent in my before and so you kind of feel like you didn't have a choice but to be at that point. So I really feel like if we work on building those relationships to where that dialogue is just constant, you know, back and forth, a two-way, effective, open, consistent, clear communication, if we're working on that, then it's not really going to probably get down to the district level at that point because you've dealt with it beforehand.
I agree. Well, Sharon, this has been a fabulous discussion. And again, I think we could probably talk about it for hours and hours. But is there anything that you would like to share that we have not discussed?
Just point out the Family and Community Engagement Office under Director Miranda Scully. We do have Family and Community Engagement Liaisons to cover every school. I think I've already talked about that, but I just want to reiterate that. We are here to help. We want to help. We're all passionate about engaging our families in education. And the multilingual family ambassadors, we're really working on getting that word out there too, so that people who speak other languages from other cultures, that they feel welcome and they feel like they're included.
That's fantastic. Well, before I post this episode, I'll make sure to put some of those links that we've discussed in the show notes so that that people can go directly there to be able to discover some of this new programming that you've got to offer.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Education Perspectives. Feel free to share your thoughts on our Facebook page. Let us know which education perspectives you would like to hear or share. Please subscribe and share with your friends.